chugging along, writing a song when something special comes along. It's a long-winded directionless discussion for conversationalists.
You bring the wit,
you bring the brains, and we'll talk it over between takes.
Welcome back to Between Takes with Opal Entertainment. I'm Andrew Driscoll.
And I'm Olivia O'Neill.
And today we're talking about Christian art.
We'll be basing our discussion off of a conversation between Dallas Jenkins and Jonathan Rumi.
They're going to talk about their perspective on art as a Catholic and a Protestant, and Liv and I are going to throw in our two cents.
So sit back, relax, and enjoy this week's episode of
Between Takes.
Are you done coughing?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. I just want to make sure.
Thank you.
That coughing is under control. Like, what's his name? Andy Kaufman. Is that his name? Who is Andy Kaufman?
I don't know.
I think of Andy Warhol sometimes.
What do you why do you think of him for?
Because he was the guy who started the Velvet Undergrounds, which was this weird, like, would today be considered like the like a really like indie rock group of like musicians and all that.
Oh. Yeah. Interesting name.
He also made movies, I think, and he was a painter. He was like one of those, like, tried to be like a jack of all trades.
Yeah.
But everyone, it was, you know, everyone was high all the time. So,
they get recognized.
So, we kind of wanted, like, what he was trying to do is kind of what we want to do, but we want to do it sober. Ideally, it would be best to do it sober.
Try it out.
Yeah. So, we'll start out sober and see how things go.
Yeah.
We may.
Well, welcome back, everybody. I hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Mm-hmm. Liv, how was your Thanksgiving?
I don't know yet, because it's not Thanksgiving yet.
It's not Thanksgiving.
We're recording this in advance, mm-hmm. but...
My Thanksgiving was awesome.
Yeah, we should just say that, and then I'm sure it will be.
Right.
Yeah. What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
Probably the turkey or mashed potatoes.
Nice.
Like, specific to just Thanksgiving? Or
yeah, that's just like, when I think of Thanksgiving, I think of this dish that I don't really have any other time of year.
Any other time of year?
I mean, turkey is one that I don't really make it. I never really have made a roast turkey myself, but don't have roast, like a whole turkey other than on Thanksgiving, I would say.
I think stuffing's probably the most specific. Mm. Well, I guess cranberry sauce, there's a bunch. Sweet potatoes. Thanksgiving and like the Christmas, that whole like month or something between like Christmas, Thanksgiving, we kind of have a lot of, that's kind of where the holidays are, where like we have lefse a lot, but that's a lot of it's Christmas and Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So it's not specific.
I like lefse.
I think cranberries might be the most exclusive to Thanksgiving.
Okay. Yeah. Cranberries are good. Do you like the homemade ones or like the ones out of a can?
I like the ones out of a can, but I also like my Aunt Julie made this really good. I think I was telling you about it the other day, where it had like marshmallow puff stuff in it. So it was kind of like a cranberry parfait type
thing.
Sure. That was really delicious.
Sounds good.
That was really good. Yeah.
Funzie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we have a pretty cool topic to talk about today.
Yes.
I'm very excited to.
Yep. We are trying to, we're going to follow Andy Warhol on his path to acid and LSD.
No.
Oh, we're not?
No.
Oh. Well, this is going to be a short podcast.
this kind of came about because we've just been discussing it, us two, Aiden and I, about like our different opinions and like different things we've heard and like grown up. But for me specifically, I'm excited to kind of articulate different ideas and then come to some different conclusion. Like, obviously not like, this is the conclusion I live by now.
Right.
But just, it's good, I think, to, well, let's, we're going to be talking about like saints and holy places and things on earth that I've accepted for a while as certain, let me back up. There's certain things that I've accepted but haven't actually worked through how I've gotten to my conclusions before.
Mm, sure.
And also some things I've just never really thought about.
Right.
So it's kind of fun to be able to, I think it's important to be able to articulate and also just think through some of these things, even if they don't necessarily in the end matter to my salvation, whether I've like know these things or don't know these things.
Sure.
But I think it will like enhance my knowledge and wisdom and maybe hopefully just expound on some of my curiosities I've had.
Sure. Yeah.
So we're gonna, so
it's kind of, this is, Liv and I had a conversation a week or something ago, kind of along these lines. And then we also kind of be building off of our conversation last week with Harmon. Last week was specifically kind of about like music and faith. And this week is a bit more, kind of building off of both those conversations. And we're using this, there was this video came out almost a year ago. But it's Dallas Jenkins, who's the creator of The Chosen, and what is his name? Jonathan Rumi, I think is how you pronounce it, who plays Jesus in The Chosen. The Chosen is a TV show about Jesus and his disciples and all that.
Which, have you seen any of it?
I've seen the first episode, but
I think I'm on the same, like maybe the first two.
Yeah.
But I'm interested now.
I really want to see it. Every time I talk to someone about it, every time I hear something about it, I'm like, man, that does sound really good.
I really should watch it.
And it's just like, I haven't made the effort.
I know.
Maybe we should start it tonight.
It's on an app.
Yeah.
It's its own app. Which is, and it's like fun. It's a kind of, anyway, it's a cool project, but.
Yeah. Continue. It sounds really awesome. Yeah. But they last, I think June of 2021, is when it said they were invited to the Vatican to like meet the Pope. And so while they were there, they did a lot of like sightseeing and saw all these historic cathedrals and tombs and statues and giant, you know, Renaissance art pieces and all that, just because, you know, when in Rome, as the saying goes. And Jonathan Rumi, who plays Jesus, is Catholic, and Dallas Jenkins, who's like the writer and director creator, is evangelical. And so they there's just kind of this video of the two of them. We'll link it in the show notes for you guys. They just talk about their experience going, seeing all these giant, all these ancient Christian art pieces.
It's cool because their conversation, they're not afraid to share what each, like they both have kind of pretty strong differing opinions on their experiences at least, but they're able to have a conversation even though they look at things so differently.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which is just really cool.
Right. And so it's kind of a common, so just Liv and I are both Protestant, but I, many of my good friends growing up were Catholic, are Catholic. And so I never saw any weird barrier between being Catholic or Lutheran or Baptist or whatever. Mm-hmm. It wasn't until I was older and we actually started having discussions where I was like, oh, there are differences in how we view things and how we like practice our faith or whatever, right? And so I, because some of my best friends growing up were Catholic and I hung out with them a lot, I learned a lot about Catholicism and I really like a lot of Catholicism. There's a lot of things in regular parts of the Catholic church service that I think are really cool, beautiful things that I wish Protestants could adopt, at least some of them. And this is a longer discussion we can get into later on, I'm sure. But a common Protestant skepticism and complaint of Catholicism is they idolize, they turn these statues into altars and they idolize those things and they don't have the proper reverence or relationship with God and none of those things. And a common complaint of Catholics towards Protestants is they have lost all reverence for these beautiful pieces of art, these beautiful holy places. They've lost all respect and reverence for these things that are written into the Bible. Mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll touch a little bit on our actual opinions on like how the church evolved and like, you know, the Reformation and all those things. But we're primarily talking like today. We're kind of taking some of those quotes from that video of Jonathan Rumi and Dallas Jenkins talking about their experience in St. Peter's Basilica, and kind of using that as a jumping off point to talk. And again, it's kind of,
because it's one of those things where like, if you watch the video, which you know, Dallas says something and you're like, oh yeah, mm-hmm. that makes sense. And then Jonathan mm-hmm. says something and I'm like, oh yeah, that makes sense. So I think it is like a, you can go too far on one side. And even Dallas was talking about his religion being mm-hmm. evangelical and talking about some of the negative things that he sees and says the Catholics do this and I admire and see how that works. And then I guess Dallas was, or Jonathan wasn't as much. He's quite like, anyway, the point is that you can go too far on either side, I think.
Right. And that's one of the, we can start with that one. One of the things that Dallas Jenkins says is, I think that there's danger in both sides. One can become too idolatrous. One can become too dismissive. Because that's one of the, I guess we'll just start, one of the things that, where is it? Dallas Jenkins also said in the video, art really wasn't, he's talking about in the early years of the church and then mm-hmm. like the Renaissance and all that. Art really was an expression of worship. And I do believe that Protestants have overcorrected, but I also do see people go into these places who treat these pieces of art almost as holy. I don't know. What do you think of that? What do you think of that idea? Because sorry, you go first.
Well, the first thing that I think of, if I were to go into the Basilica, I think I would have complete awe and wonder.
Mm-hmm.
Am I reacting to holiness? Am I reacting to beauty? Are they similar?
Yeah.
am I reacting to God's presence with me just then and seeing how mm-hmm. like this beauty, am I just reacting purely to the artist's ability to be able to craft this amazing structure?
Right.
I think it's all of those things at once. I'm not sure if walking from outside and then walking into the building, I'm automatically in a place of holiness.
Right. Like God is all of a sudden more present with you.
Yeah. I don't agree with that. And I don't, I think from what I can understand, that could be some people's point of view.
Sure. I don't think the Catholic Church at large is claiming that.
No. But yeah. But I would just.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my answer to that.
Yeah. And his comment on, you know, I see some people, but I also do see people go into these places who treat these pieces of art as almost holy. And this is where it becomes like the relationship comes in. Those people's relationship with God, your relationship with God, and your relationship with those people. If they're strangers over there and they're kneeling before a statue of Mary, well, maybe within their hearts they have the wrong impression of Mary or whatever. And maybe not. Maybe they absolutely have the proper perception of who Jesus was, and they see the statue of Mary and say, let's look at this beautiful, remember who Mary was, let's look at this beautiful depiction of Mary, and let's worship God together. And, you know, and I guess part of me thinks, it's really interesting, Dallas Jenkins was on another podcast with Kevin McCreary, and Kevin said something about how sometimes he can look at church and he sees people like raising their hands and is like, what if, like, why are they doing that? Because he was like, I never have like felt the Spirit move me to like raise my hands. So, and some people do feel that, but then he's like, why isn't? What if they're not? What if they're just doing it because they want to show off? And Dallas Jenkins' response was like, well, that's their business. It's your business to worship God in church and connect with the people with you. It's not your business to determine whether or not others are. Yeah. But I think it's interesting because here in this video, he kind of says something to me kind of contrary to that, where I kind of think like, well, yeah, what business is it if they are observing this as holy? Because to an extent, who determines whether or not something is holy? That's a genuine question, Liv.
I don't know.
Oh, you have no idea?
Well, I had another thought. Can I say I forget? And maybe you were going to talk about this later, but Jonathan said something about how... Oh, shoot. It was right here. Oh, there was a mass going on when they were in the basilica, and he said that was something that he wanted to be part of because he wanted to interact in a sense of worship with other people. So I see that as being something, and I'm just going to go back to this example because it's a common one we see today, is like people raising their hand. They're participating. Right. It's like you can use your voice, you can sing, you know, maybe people, there's churches where there's dancing, where there's like actual like get up and it's a participation. It's not, not a passive like mumbling,
right?
You know,
right.
And I'm not saying one is, I think if you're passively mumbling, that's probably not great.
Sure.
If you're a quiet intake worship, that's your thing, then that's cool too. Anyway.
You're saying having
multiple things, you know, raising your hand, if you're not, you maybe
being
you're
able
not
to collectively be a part of something, but also have the opportunity to you uniquely express worship.
Yeah. And maybe moments. Some people feel that by maybe they're not being like their arms being raised out of.
Sure.
You know, some unknown thing. They're probably deciding to do it, I would assume. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it's always to show off. I think it is to, like, you know, I've heard people talk about how, like, in prayer, even just lifting your hands out as, like, an act of, and I don't know what to think about that. I haven't ever felt led to do that in a public place. But maybe it's because I'm being too reserved and care about what people think and think that I might be showing off. So there's just a lot to unpack there. That's maybe a different discussion.
And that is, but I think I have different like actual physical postures depending on what type of prayer it is. And it hasn't been super, I was just this morning noticing that like when I'm listening, it is more holding hands out. Mm-hmm. When it's me like talking, it's more everything's pulled inward kind of.
Oh, interesting.
So I didn't notice it this morning. I was like, why is that? I wonder why.
Yeah.
And maybe it's like I'm trying to make myself as small and humble as possible when I'm like, hey, can I please? These are the problems. Whereas when it's listening, it's like, I want to be totally open to all these things. So it is more of a kind of shoulders back, relaxed posture.
Huh.
So that's kind of a side note. But yeah, one of the...
Oh, yeah.
Sorry.
No, you go. Keep going.
Well, just that, what you were talking about, Jonathan Rumi says, when you're going into a place like St. Peter's, you can't help but just be stupefied at the beauty of the artistry and the thought of how long it actually took to build this cathedral. And so you have to get past that to find those moments of personal connection. So for me, participating in the Mass is what makes it extremely personal. You kind of have to put blinders on, and you have to just sort of, he says a lot of kind of just sort of, you kind of have to put blinders on, and you have to just sort of find those things that have resonance, not reverence. So yeah, he was talking about you walk in and you see, like you were saying a minute ago, and you, it's all these things at once of look at this reflecting God's creation. Look at, oh, the people who built this, and they had such, you know, love and joy in bringing this forward and showing it to us, and all the centuries that have passed that people have preserved this and God's presence here. But then within that, you go past that and go like, so where are those unique, as Dallas Jenkins was talking about, for him, the like moments that resonate with him are those tiny little interactions and like super personal, unique experiences. Yeah. And so Jonathan Rumi was saying like, yes, but that can, that those unique experiences can exist within these giant cathedrals, within this super structured Mass that has been around for centuries. There are still those moments of humanity. That's inevitable, right? It's inevitable that humanity will be a part of God's creation and his worship, right? Yeah. Sorry, your thoughts on that?
No, yeah. I don't know. I don't have any further thoughts on that, but that makes sense.
I like that. Yeah. One of the things he said too later on, kind of along those same lines, talking about the creators, how they had this love for God, and all that. And he said something about, they were saying, let's show God the magnitude of our love for him by building these magnificent monuments.
Who said that?
Jonathan Rumi.
About his show?
No, about
Basilica?
The people who built the Basilica, the people who built these cathedrals and monuments. He was saying,
on behalf of them?
Yeah, kind of. Okay. Yeah. He was saying they were going, let's show God the magnitude of our love for him by building these magnificent monuments.
Right.
And then Dallas Jenkins' response to that was, right, so for me, I've come to see that there's strengths and weaknesses to it, because I believe that Protestants have gone too far in the opposite direction and become almost skeptical of art and skeptical of imagery because they don't want to be idolatrous and because they don't want to be so symbolic that you miss out on the truth that's being said. These relics feel like idols to some Protestants, and I've come to believe, well, we Protestants have missed out on some truly great opportunities to be artistic. I think that's true. I think there are a lot of Protestants that, like we're talking about with Harmon, that accept hallelujah, is the best art we can get. Mm-hmm. And I think better art.
That's kind of why we've been talking about beauty is like, learn, I think it's just learning to recognize that in our life, so that, I mean, there's so much to be grateful for and to be like, that I think gets checked off of our brains because of other things that we just have so much access to today. One thought that did come to my mind about like holiness and things, when I feel like that word is used in the Bible when God is physically present. And it's like, take off your shoes, this ground is holy.
Sure, yeah.
Because we don't really know, is it a person? Was it a mist? Like, it's not really, sometimes it's a bush or whatever.
Moses, it's on fire. We think you've been burning some bush.
So I guess to me, from what I can understand and what I have believed thus far in my life is holiness is equated to God's physical presence on earth.
Sure.
And I'm not sure you can get that in any other place.
So what do you think about, I mean, there are those in the video, they talk about I forget what they're called, but the stairs that Jesus walked on, that was a physical landmark that he walked through. Does that count? And we're splitting hairs a little bit, obviously, you know, the exact, yes, in that, you know, in Exodus, when God says, take off your shoes, you're walking on holy ground, he was there present declaring it as holy.
Yeah.
So if God declares it something,
that's, and it was like a literal physical, like he, like couldn't look up because it was like, and I don't think we really actually have any idea what that's like.
Sure. Yeah.
So
you think if we can look at it and actually be a part of it, it must not be holy?
What? I don't know. I have no idea.
Yeah.
From what I can picture, if I were to walk on those stairs, I think I would be filled with awe and like think and maybe even, you know, move to like strong mm-hmm. emotion because of like right. he's walked on it. Like right. that's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're, he walked a lot of places.
Sure. Yeah.
So is it like anywhere he walked is holy, but for some reason the stairs get deemed that?
I think it's that's one specific monument that has lived through the centuries that we have an exact
yeah.
point to. But yeah.
But I guess my point, I don't know. He was also part man and part God, and you know, and there's all that too. So I think of I'm not sure. Do you think it's holy? Do you have to feel a change when? I guess I didn't know if you have to feel like a specific actual like change, or is it just because okay, I'm thinking it's holy. I believe it's holy. Thus, now I feel the whole.
There's a line in the trailer of the. I mean, I'll assume it'll be in the show. In season 3 of The Chosen.
Oh, really?
Where when he like tells his disciples like, "You are my disciples." And I don't know which one of them. One of them says, "I don't feel any different." And Jesus goes, "I don't need you to feel anything." And Kevin McCreary talks about that. And he's like, "That's so good. That's a really great line. Like, you don't need to feel anything for Jesus to work. You don't need to feel anything for what's true to be true." Sarah Sparks has a line: "You might shut the page, you might turn the page, you might shut the book, but the truth is still truth, even if you don't look." And
it's a very rhymey.
It is. I mean, it's a very sing-songy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's a great. Everyone should listen to that album.
Okay. So do you think the stairs are holy then? Or what is holiness to you?
I mean, I guess I don't have, I think.
Or how do you define
it? I don't think saying this is holy, if it's not explicitly declared by God, is necessarily blasphemous. I also don't think, therefore, everyone should observe it with the same reverence that I do. That doesn't mean that I then have the freedom to declare whatever I want to be holy, and I can create my own rules around it or whatever. I don't think that's the case. Mm-hmm. But I'm just trying to think of an example. I mean, I think God's creation is holy, right?
Yeah.
So I think you are holy, and the earth that we walk on is holy, and the air that we breathe is holy.
I don't know if that's the word. It's hard when we have so many words that mean similar things. Mm. We were talking about this the other day. I don't know if this is a different thing. This person said, or this YouTube, no, I'm on Google. Okay. God's holiness means he is transcendent. Every individual aspect of who God is so uniquely glorious that it cannot be fully measured or comprehended. He's beyond the limits and borders of every other thing. He's greater in every way than all else.
So that's God's holiness, but what is holiness itself? Can holiness be separated from God's holiness?
Exalted or worthy of complete devotion as one perfect in goodness and righteousness. I feel like it might be just a word used for God.
Exclusive to God?
Dedicated or consecrated to God or a religious purpose. Sacred?
What was the one just before that? Worthy of exaltation or something?
Exalted or worthy of complete devotion as one perfect in goodness and righteousness. Which is it God? Perfect? I mean, we can't really be that.
So going by that definition, then nothing else on earth is truly holy?
Yeah.
So what about the ground that Moses walks on? Like
It was because of God. God was holy and was in, I don't know. This is tough.
And that's where it's like, so does that mean that geographical spot later on, 100 years later, could Moses go back to that point and go, oh yeah, this is the holy ground. Is it still that way?
I'd assume not, because God wasn't physically present. But I haven't really thought about it. I feel like I'm probably going to limp back later and be like, oh.
We have a tendency to do that.
Now I have a different opinion on this.
Yeah. We have a tendency to do that, but that doesn't mean stop doing it and have a perfect idea first.
Yeah.
It's have a flawed idea
and present it as forward, but I just want to make sure I'm presenting it as
neither of us have a super strict definition on what holiness is. But I do think there is a I think there's an appropriate reverence that can come with things like St. Peter's Basilica, you know.
Absolutely, yeah.
I think there's a certain reverence to, you know, that the First Methodist Church in the small town, you know?
Sure. If anything, like, it's cool to see just such a big structure and so many people led, or whatever the word you may be called, to put all their efforts into,
right,
because they're so, like, devoted to God and what they're supposed to. I mean, just that alone is beautiful. I think that's kind of what he was trying to touch on in the quote, Jonathan, the artistry of, and just how in awe and, and the fact that, like, you see all these people, even though it was like many, many years ago, that did this. And then obviously we're not doing the same thing, but we're trying to have the same heart as those people in what we're creating in art that we're doing.
And I guess that's the difference. That's where, that's kind of what we were talking about last week with Harmon, was like, so how can we do something that is more artistic? Because they were talking about just like technically to build the structure that has lasted these centuries.
Yeah.
Like, that's really sound expertise that they had architecturally. And it's this beautiful piece of art, whereas the average Protestant today would see that as gaudy, would see that as idolatrous, would see that as showy. And I think, no, I think there's a way.
You think they do?
I think there's a lot of Protestants that I know that would say that would say, oh, we're trying to build this giant thing that that's, we shouldn't do that, you know?
Do you think that you have the capability to create something holy?
No, not alone. But I do think that I have the ability to create things, and I think God will determine whether or not it is holy.
Okay, so going back to the basilica, do you think the architectures and the things like that were holy because Jesus was there physically on, like, the stairs, for example? Or were they holy because of the because it was people that created the statues.
Right.
Did God come down specifically to that statue of Mary and make it holy? How do we know?
I think...
is it just because of time? Because I feel like that's probably not.
I don't think the Vatican has declared St. Peter's Basilica is a uniquely holy cathedral. They've declared it is a unique cathedral in terms of its historical prominence and in its vicinity to everything, right?
Mm-hmm. Jonathan in the video agreed that it was holy.
Yeah. But I think he would probably also, I guess, I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't speculate too much on that.
That's just the curious part of it. It's like, how did it get deemed that way? And it may be, it's just curious of, like, how it came to be that way.
And I guess kind of like what you said near the beginning, how, whether we go to St. Peter's Basilica or the First United Methodist in some small town, are our lives more or less enriched? Because in a way, I think Ratatouille is a beautiful piece of art. I think Dear Wormwood by the O'Hellos is a beautiful piece of art that magnitudes God's creation, or magnifies God's creation. So in a way that I say that, and it's like, that seems kind of contradictory to what I said a minute ago about...
I know, I go back and forth.
I guess whether or not something is holy, to me, I don't have much... I personally don't seem to be very affected one way or the other by it.
I've never been somewhere that was deemed or dedicated by a lot of people, like the Basilica or like Peter's grave or whatever.
Yeah.
That is like, this is a holy place. I've actually never been to one.
But you,
So I'm just curious, like, maybe that would change my opinion after visiting.
But do you think, just off the top of your head, would you have a certain reverence for St. Peter's Basilica? Would you have a certain awe about it, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, seeing pictures of in the video of the basilica, it's like, wow.
I mean,
that
I did that
amazing.
Way over just like some simple stained glass at a church or something. Or even just like Franklin near us in Tennessee is like a pretty historic old place. There's like some beautiful buildings there. I've never been inside, but there's this one church that we used to pass on our way, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I stop out there and I look at it, the beauty of it, and I think this is such a beautiful place to dedicate it in town to God. And people know, like, this is a Christian church.
Right.
So I can't imagine what that would be like on a huge, huge, huge level. Sure. And I do think somewhere that is dedicated, and I know, I mean, I could go to, like, a beautiful art gallery Mm-hmm. And maybe then they're filled with people that aren't necessarily Christians that did these paintings. And I would have a certain awe. But sure. I do think I would probably have a different type of awe and reverence.
But it's also filled with the devil and you're probably going to hell because of that.
Okay.
Sorry.
But I think I would have a different type of awe and reverence to a church.
Right.
So maybe there is some meaning, you know.
And that's what I think, why you and I and Harmon and many, many others are such strong advocates of Christians making great art. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so many examples over history of not, Vincent van Gogh didn't use his paintings explicitly to spread the gospel. That's not a hard word, Aiden. But he painted, and he painted beautifully, mm-hmm. and he painted beautifully because he loved God, or maybe not.
He loved
God,
life, so.
And it's this God and painting were such an integral part of who he was.
Yeah.
That's how it happened with him.
Yeah.
And I think we need more of that. So I guess just to kind of wrap up, one of the last things Dallas Jenkins says, is I hope long term that the personal relationship with Jesus and the personal connection we have to these people who walked with him, results in a worship that is at the grand scale and at the grand scope and nature that we see in St. Peter's Basilica and vice versa. I never want one to replace the other. I want that to draw you to a personal relationship, and I want the personal relationship to draw you to worship. And I think that's really good. I think, who was it? Oh, it's probably someone in the Bible that says, I know it is, faith without works is dead. And works without faith is dead, right? It doesn't say explicitly, but James talks about what is, so you believe in God, even the devils believe in God. And that's where we get into real tricky, murky waters of works-based yeah. salvation, faith-based salvation, grace-based salvation. And I was just talking to Eamon today about that. And I just, the two of us were talking about things, and he was, talking about the church he goes to and some of the conversations he's had with those people. And I was talking about my experiences, and I just realized, I totally understand why people reach the conclusion, these extreme, to us today, we can be like those radical idiots who thought our salvation was based off of works. And it's like, well, yeah, but in the Bible, it does talk about your works and how important that is. It's not, and it's like, there's a lot in the Bible that it's like, yeah, this is super, super vital and important to you and all that.
Yeah.
That isn't saying this is exclusively the only thing you should do, right?
Well, it's so interesting because it's said so
emphatically.
Is that the word? Yeah. Pointed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next chapter it says something that feels like contradictory because of our one-sided brains.
And that's James specifically when he's talking about what in the book of James, he's not talking about do this and you'll get to go to heaven. Do this for the purpose of salvation. He's saying do this because this is how Jesus called you to treat your brothers. Do this because this is how you're called to act, right? And I think that's an important thing to recognize is James, in the book of James, is not telling you this as a template and guide to get to heaven. He's telling you this as a calling from Jesus.
Yeah.
Whereas Jesus in, different points in the Gospels is talking more explicitly about in order to get to heaven. And at different points in the Gospel, Jesus is talking more before you get to heaven, right? Yeah. And I think it's really easy for us to have one-track minds and see exclusively to get to heaven. And we can hear that little thing, faith without works is dead. Oh, that means that in order to get to heaven, I need to have these works and this is what I need to do. And even there, I hear some people talk about how legalistic Catholicism is because they're like, how can saying, sorry, I don't want to mock those people, I shouldn't do that. They say, well, you confess to someone and then you say these Hail Marys and then blah, 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 blah. And they see it as super legalistic. And I go, how is that more legalistic for you doing that because you feel obligated to do those things, to pay penance for your sin in order to try and live a more virtuous life? How is that more legalistic than volunteering at Sunday school? How is that more legalistic than handing out programs at church? Does that make sense? Does that,
from one side of things, yeah,
because I see
I don't know what
you're doing those for the purpose of.
I don't know what everyone's doing them for exactly, but I can see what you mean in that instance. Sure.
And I guess that's why what I was saying a minute ago is part of it is what business is it of yours how people, because again, I say that and then I go it is our business to look out for each other, right? And hold each other accountable. And if we see someone doing wrong, we should.
Well, it's our business, right? In the fact that, we want to I want to get better at, you know, I want to do what I'm supposed to do.
Right.
And part of that is going to be looking at different people's religion and seeing what they're doing. And, but I think it also comes down to like your personal relationship with God and what your, some people might, know, God might talk to us through different things. For mm-hmm. some people, it might be through other people to tell them. Mm-hmm. For some people, it might be an actual like God to person type of, right. you know, understand, you know, or whatever, or it, whatever. It just could depend on your life. Maybe it's through the Bible and like the actual words are in the Bible. And it's usually a combination of all those things. Right. I don't know where I'm going with this. I guess it does get murky because you want to have an opinion about these things, but you don't want to be judgmental of the people that right. do it differently.
That's what, yeah.
So I think that's kind of what you're saying.
And right? I think it's also easy because it's really easy for us to want to develop a one-track mind. And we're trying to describe a three-dimensional object in a two-dimensional world, mm-hmm. right? God's vast mercy and grace and omniscience and perfect judgment.
Yeah.
Go down the list of all the things that God has described as,
yeah.
is not fully knowable to us at this point,
yeah.
right? So,
I mean, I go back to this, and I don't know if it's, I guess I find it to be the, I think start everything with the leave your things, come walk with me, be glad type mentality of like.
Just quote your own song.
I don't know, sorry. It's just, I don't know. It just makes sense to me where, mm-hmm. and you can't, I mean, you have to talk about these things, so maybe that doesn't make sense, but. I think of us on earth as busybodies like ants, like little ants, and God above us and just like looking down. And sometimes it's like, mm-hmm. sometimes I need to step out of myself and also look down because I think mm-hmm. we busy ourselves with things that are unimportant in the end. And it is like, it is, we're imperfect trying to achieve perfectness. I mean,
right.
we're never going to on earth, but we're called to still do it. And that's,
right.
you have to figure out a way. But I do think, yeah, well, I think it goes hand in hand with the creative. It's picking the things that are important. Creation, friendship, relationships, the tiny little nuances of how you act out your religion and how you act out your worship is interesting to talk about and helpful because you want to, the more you know and the more that works for you or for a group of, I don't know, do I want to have an enhanced life on earth as a Christian? More, you know, if I can learn these things from other people and it enhance my relationship with God and feel closer, I'm going to go ahead and do that.
And this is where, I mean, I think like this isn't, we're at a point in the conversation where it's not like, hey folks, here are the thoughts of Aiden and Liv on these things. It's just like, here's Aiden and Liv trying to work through different things. And Aiden gets frustrated because he wants to nail it down, but at the same time is dissatisfied every time someone says like, well, maybe this is it. And so,
yeah,
I have encountered God most prominently and strongly and just like unarguably through the art of humans. And most of that art has not been people saying, hey, I want to lead people to Jesus. I'm going to tell the story of Jesus. Most of the art has not been that. Most of the art has been stories about broken, flawed, sinful, messed up people. And that God has shown himself so prominently through those works. Mm-hmm. So I go, we need to create more of that. We need to create more of that type of those types of stories and portray those real people, not portray the perfect cookie cutter, everything's fine, and we just need to trust Jesus characters. Those are real people too. But the real,
you just want to be honest in people's lives, right, and journeys.
Right. And so I think I think Protestants have missed out on a lot of great art. Because we see, oh, a Catholic made that. And it's not a super conscious thing, but it is this kind of like, you know, I don't like the King James translation of the Bible because it's more infallible. I like it because I think it's pretty words. It sounds cool to me, a lot of it. It's a preference. It's not that it's truer to what was originally said, because it's not. You know, I don't think it is.
Yeah.
It's just like, in my opinion, King James is more artistic than ESV. And that doesn't, again, that doesn't mean it's better. But I mostly read ESV when I'm actually like studying, it's ESV. When it's, I wonder how King James says this in this particular psalm or whatever. Oh, that's
interesting. Resonates with you more.
Right, it resonates with me in a different way. As same with, like, you know, why have so many people put the psalms to music? Well, because they have different ways of interpreting the musical emotion of the psalm, right?
Absolutely.
So, yeah, I don't know. I guess I think we've missed out on a lot of art, and I think we should start really embracing what that is. On every level, and I think
we as in like
we as in Christians, we as in I don't like the idea of sacred and secular music because I think
it's another discussion.
But that's just something like we were talking about with Harmon. I think quote unquote secular music, there's no reason the Holy Spirit can't be fully living within that music, and I think it does. Correct. It does not live in all, but I do think I don't think any of it is, you know, Colony House is not an explicitly Christian band. Every member of the band is Christian. And I think a lot of their music tends towards a Christian life, is writing about a Christian lifestyle. Mm-hmm. And a lot of their music has very beautiful, profound truth within it. So I think the Holy Spirit is absolutely revealed within their music. Whether they intend it that way or not, whether their audience perceives it all the time that way or not, I absolutely encounter the Holy Spirit in Colony House's music. And that's a testament to the Holy Spirit and the power of God, and also a testament to the artistry of Colony House. First and foremost, they want to make beautiful, incredible, awesome music, right?
Yeah.
That's sorry, I'm spinning my wheels a little bit. You have any closing thoughts, Liv?
I feel like if I were to listen to this type of episode, I'd be like wanting to jump in with opinions and stuff. Mm. So I hope that it's not frustrating for people to listen
to. But please do jump in. Like,
I mean,
let us know.
I hope this is an ongoing convo. Yeah. And it's all about, I mean, the hope and the whole point is to live how we're supposed to.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we have these discussions and stuff. So I don't know. Thanks for I don't know. They're not deciding to let us have our platform here, but it helps us to be able to talk.
Y'all have no say in this. We have a podcast whether you like it or not.
Okay. Anywho.
Thanks for listening, folks. Appreciate it.
Next week will be December, so.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But get ready for some fun Christmas episodes because it's going to get crazy.
Yeah. It may start next week for a brand new episode of
Between Takes.